The next matter for oral argument this morning is in the matter of the petition for reinstatement of Richard J. Hopewell as an attorney at law. For the applicant, Mr. Hopewell, is Mr. Ron Valesky, an attorney from Huron. And for the disciplinary board is Mr. Robert Freeberg of Beresford. The court should note that Justice Conan Camp has disqualified himself, and the court has appointed the Honorable Robert A. Miller, former justice of this court, to sit in his stead. Mr. Valesky, it's usually a tradition in this court that in disciplinary matters that we invite the attorney to address the court directly. So if you wish to follow that tradition, you would want to reserve a portion of your time for Mr. Hopewell to personally address the court. All right, very well. And Mr. Freeberg, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel, Mr. Hopewell. I don't think there's too much I need to say on behalf of the board this morning. This matter has been pending for a while. A couple of years ago, the board heard the petition of Mr. Hopewell and made its recommendation. That was then remanded back to the board to take a look at the Natchez case. And this summer, the board conducted another due process hearing and inquired into that matter and filed the supplemental findings, conclusions, and recommendation in, or determination, I guess, in this particular matter, and recommending that he be fully reinstated. I think that from the board's perspective, the fact that this has been before this court, I think on at least three previous occasions, and perhaps this is four, the court has made some findings previously. And I think in the 99 order, if I'm correct, in that case, the court found that the petitioner had met the burden of providing by a clear and convincing evidence that he was entitled to reinstatement, and then those five conditions were placed on there. So the board, I think, wrestled a bit with how to treat that and in compliance with the order of remand, which included, in addition to the Natchez matter, said that the board should consider or should look at all other facts which are relevant. And so, not knowing exactly what that meant, we did try to look at least some of the factors that it seemed to me, at least, as I was trying to prepare this, that go back to the grounds for reinstatement. And that were those statutory grounds that are set out in 1984.
Did you deal with any other cases that Mr. Hopewell dealt with or participated in, say, the last five, 6 years?
Not specifically, no, but we were not. I think our impression was that he really had very few, and the testimony was this was the only contested matter that he'd been involved in over that period of time, Justice Sabers.
I didn't see any in the record. Was there, maybe I missed it, but I didn't see another case other than Natchez.
That's right.
Discussed.
That's right. I think that's right.
I had the impression that he wasn't really practicing in court except for this one case.
That's right. That's what we determined.
Okay.
And I did check, you know, as I thought it was part of my job, and I didn't discover any other cases in the that indicated that, and that's what Mr. Johnson testified to, and I think that was Mr. Hopewell's testimony too. So he's had a very limited practice, and so far as I know, this was the only contested matter he'd been involved in.
Let me ask you that, following up on that, this is the only contested case that he has been involved in, and both the trial judge and the opposing counsel who were there and witnessed him recommended that he still be under supervision.
That's right.
So why was that not given any weight?
I think it was I can't get inside the mind of the board, Justice Mayor Henry. And I've thought about that a lot because I think that's kind of the crux of the whole situation. I've read the transcript several times, and of course I was there to hear the evidence, and I think it was a matter of weight, and I think the board, well, like I say, that I was impressed by Mr. Johnson's testimony. He'd had a long time of contact with Mr. Hopewell. I think if I was going to speculate about the board, I think they probably had some of that same sense. I think that the opinions that both Mr. Kading and Judge Caldwell had came out of this single incident. But each also testified that they were influenced, at least to some extent, by Richard Hopewell's history and his general reputation. You know, I tried to inquire from, I think, almost all the witnesses, because I think there is a concern about, if I can quote that language, at least, you know, that the integrity of the profession is protected and that it's not subversive of the public interest to reinstate him fully. And that was a concern that I was trying to do by my questions. And those were, I guess I don't know that the answers were particularly helpful in that regard. And then I was concerned that perhaps this court had already crossed that threshold in its 99 opinion. So,
well, if you make the statement that the trial judge and opposing counsel were influenced by his past history, I don't know if I want to use the word influence. Maybe considers a little kinder word, but is it appropriate for us to consider that too?
Well, I expect that's right. I don't know how you'd, I mean, I struggle with that myself, Your Honor. What does it mean to be subversive of the public interest? And what does it, you know, how does that affect the integrity of the profession? And does this event that happened, what, 16 or 15 years ago, does that continue to reflect on Richard Hopewell's fitness, his entitlement, his right, his license to practice without supervision? I think it's a hard question to answer. I've struggled with that myself.
Even in the findings of fact, the board recognized some eccentricities.
Oh, yes.
An unorthodox style. And when, of course, you read his testimony and you read the transcript, that comes out in the, you can see that. So, you know, we give deference to trial courts' observations of demeanor and so forth on a lot of other issues.
I understand that. And I'm not surprised that that you would say that to me. I mean, I understand that.
But here we give deference to the findings of the board rather than any deference to the circuit court judge who happened to witness the trial, correct? I mean,
yes, I think.
In this capacity, the circuit court judge was just simply a witness.
That's right. That's right.
However, the weight that they gave it was less than. The board didn't give the weight to it, correct?
The board did not adopt her position, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Was the fact that he has a limited practice a factor in your mind in the board's decision?
Again, I don't know that I can, you know, get inside the minds of those people sitting on the board.
You were there when they were
deliberating. I would think that was part of it. I think part of it was, I think they were impressed by Mr. Valesky's closing, frankly. I mean, if you read that, you don't get the emotion that he had, but, you know, his play, how long does this go on? I think the board was influenced by that. Probably the fact that his client who came testified, she was satisfied with what he had done. So, you know, I think the board was was concerned, perhaps, Justice Mannery, back to your question, when Judge Caldwell said that she felt, I can't quote exactly, they were in the findings, you know, that she felt like this was out of control. I think maybe the board was concerned that she might have been able to, you know, put the hammer down, if that's the right word, but all of those things played in there, and I can't, you know, it could have been a variety of reasons for the various members of the board.
Apparently, the board gave more weight to the opinions of Mr. Bonage and Mr. Johnson than Judge Caldwell and Mr. Keating. Is there anything in the record to indicate that Mr. Bonage or Mr. Johnson had gone to court with Mr. Hopewell in the past?
Well, Mr. Bonage testified about having referred some cases or done some cases with him. Richard Johnson, of course, has been supervising him for a long time. And he went back and finished up that Notches case later after Judge Caldwell called him. I think like a month later or something, went back and did a third day of the trial. And because she had requested that he do that, which was really, I think, a little beyond what he had agreed to do in the first place. But he's been a pretty good volunteer in this case, we felt. And does he
want out?
No. He called me last week and said he had a trial scheduled for today, and he would try to get it canceled if I thought it was mandatory that he be here. I told him I thought he ought to go ahead and represent his clients and do that. So no, he's not dissatisfied.
Okay.
Mr. Freeberg, the one area I'm having a little trouble with. Do you have the findings there with you?
I do not, but I've got them right here.
Finding 9 and 10.
Pardon me?
Finding 9 and 10.
Are you talking the second set of findings or the first one?
The second.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay, in those findings, you know, as I read this, Mr. Hopewell's been in court once. In the one experience, the board makes this finding, you know, about being disjointed and convoluted and confusing witnesses and interrupting and aggravating the judge, etc. Having made that finding a fact, it would seem to me that if this is his only experience in court, that there would be a condition that would follow. If this is his only performance that we have to base this on, and the board makes this finding, this is how he performs in court, that at a minimum there should be some supervision if he goes to court, because this is the only thing that we have. I was surprised that there wasn't some condition relating to 9 and 10 here.
Well, let me try if I can to respond to that. I think the board was concerned that if this sort of unusual but not unethical behavior by a lawyer is going to be a standard to judge whether or not that lawyer can be in the courtroom, was a big step to take, because, I mean, let's face it, we've all been in contested matters where it's hard to keep track of where the lawyer's going, and particularly, I think the board also was influenced by the emotion and the difficulty of this particular proceeding. I mean, there was a mother with but an 8-month-old child that had been taken away from her, who was apparently still nursing, and, you know, there was a lot of emotion.
But Mr. Hopewell is kind of in a—he's kind of in a different situation. As far as everything I've ever seen, his conduct has always been above board from an ethical standpoint.
Right.
There's never been a claim that he's, tried to overreach or abused his client from a standpoint of financial. Maybe part of his problems even came from the fact that he worked without pay or did too much pro bono work or something, but. So there is a difference, I think, that you know, it's almost a question of if he gets back in the courtroom or if he handles, you know, a lot of cases, or say a dozen a year instead of just, you know, maybe one or two, plus one appearance in court over 5 years, that these things are going to make him, you know, more inconsistent, his presentation more convoluted. The question is, shouldn't he have some supervision when he's in a more active practice?
I don't know that.
Maybe that's a fairer question for Mr. Valesky or for Mr. Hopewell. So
I don't know that I can really respond to that. You know, in the hearing, this last hearing, neither Johnson nor Bonage felt that way. Judge Caldwell and Scott Gating did. So, you know, and you go back to the issue. The board was struggling a little bit with just where we were in terms of what the court had already determined, too, I think, because that was not one of the conditions, that he be supervised in the courtroom in his original conditions when he was reinstated.
Was the recommendation unanimous?
I believe so. They don't take roll call vote. I don't participate in their
deliberations.
Their deliberations, no. I observe them usually, but I do not participate. But I believe that it was. And, you know, they struggled with it. I think I went back and read all of the transcripts from all the prior hearings after this remand came back to us, because I felt perhaps I hadn't done the homework that needed to be done to take this here, and when it came back, I thought, well, I should do that. So I read all of the back transcripts, I looked at all of the opinions that the court had handed down, and I mean, it's a tough deal, there's no doubt about it. Because as you said, you know, as you said, Justice Sabres, he's not had complaints filed, he's an honest person, he's a bright person, and he's kind of eccentric or approaches things a little differently, but certainly has done some good things too. So I think that's kind of where the board landed. And I expect you all struggle with that issue as well. So the board put it back in your laps, I think.
Have you completed your presentation? Or are you just moving on?
Yes, I've said all I can say.
Okay.
Thank you very much,
Mr. Freeberg. Mr. Valesky, I'll leave it to you. How much of the 20 minutes you used to wish to use, and then we'd like to hear from Mr. Hopewell if he chooses.
May it please the court and Mr. Freeberg, it's a privilege to be here today, and that's what we're talking about, the privilege of a citizen of our state to be able to represent the interests and rights of others. As Mr. Freeberg alluded to, this case has a long history, and looking at the makeup of the court, I know that some of you are very familiar with the history. Former Chief Justice Miller, having written the 1999 opinion, I believe, that conditionally reinstated Mr. Hopewell, and Justice Zinter wrote the 1995 decision in which he was denied reinstatement earlier. Having said that, he has, in all respects, complied with the wishes of this court. There is no question about that. And I know from the questions you asked Mr. Freeberg, you struggle with a couple things. One was the Natchez experience. One is if he's going to have such a limited practice, he's going to be able to come up to speed to be an effective practitioner and an effective advocate for clients. And also that finding number 9 about interrupting the flow and some convoluted questions. As Mr. Freeburg pointed out, the ethical conduct of Mr. Hopewell has never been questioned, except I believe his ethics must have been questioned to a certain extent in the 1990 situation with Judge Keene, with the criticism that was brought forth. So I think that does border on something of an ethical situation, but I believe that's all behind us now. And but he's never been, I have to admit to you folks, members of the court, I'm impressed that he practiced all those years and never had a client complaint filed with the state bar. Never was sued for malpractice. Got along very well with his client. In fact, one of the impressing things that may have impressed the disciplinary board in this case was the client herself was very satisfied with Mr. Hopewell's representation of her, which obviously, you know, doesn't make everything he did jibe perhaps with how the court would like to have seen it done in those situations. But Mr. Hopewell has complied. He understands from the very beginning, going back to the Judge Keene situation, the Judge Martin situation, the issues with his conduct that were reported in the Argus Leader. Assuming that that's behind us, he's met the conditions of his psychological standing. He's met the conditions of being supervised. He's met the conditions of the quarterly reporting, a liability insurance, CLE training, all those things, which I think, sorry.
What about the insurance? Because I read in the record that he was apparently under your policy, but then he applied independently, but I didn't see a resolution of that application. What is his status today as far as being able to be insured?
Yes, he is, as of today, Justice Zinter. He is under my policy, and he is covered by my malpractice insurance. And he has been for the last several years. His applying on his own for some reason, you may ask him that. I'm not sure.
I read that somewhere. You don't recall? That, you don't recall evidence about that?
No, I don't.
I thought I read that, but it could have been.
I just recall that he's on my insurance at the present time.
Okay.
Which really, what does it bring us? It really brings us to the Reuter case. 1993, the Reuter case, in which this court said it's fine for the petitioner to comply with the conditions of conditional reinstatement. And we've done that. But we have to do more. Not only do we have to show by clear and convincing evidence that we complied with all the conditions set out in former Chief Justice Miller's opinion, but we also have to, by clear and convincing evidence, show the court, the people of South Dakota, that Mr. Hopewell is competent to practice law, that his admission to the practice of law would not be detrimental to the public interest, and that he meets the moral qualifications. Those are the three things that Reuter established. Morally, I believe that his trustworthiness and his responsibility as a person has been shown by how he has complied with the conditions set before him. His not being detrimental to the integrity or standing of the bar or the admission of justice or the subversive or being subversive of the public interest, I think, can be established by his track record, of not being ever called before this disciplinary board by a client complaint or being sued by malpractice or sued for malpractice. And I feel the competency and learning of law, he has, you know, attended CLE, he has worked in terms of some cases in which he's worked with Attorney Johnson. Attorney Johnson has supervised him, yeoman's work since 1999, and so I believe he does have the competency to practice law. Unorthodox Yes. I can attest to that from my own personal knowing of Mr. Hopewell. But he can be a very effective advocate for people. So this board, as was pointed out by Justice Sabers, that you do careful, and under Reuter, and I think under Hopewell too, you talked about we give careful consideration to what the board did. On two occasions now, this board, the disciplinary board, in 2004 and again in 2006, on two separate occasions, have determined that Mr. Hopewell is fit to be reinstated fully to the practice of law. I'm going to quickly turn this over to Mr. Hopewell, and I can certainly understand what Justice Meyer Henry's talking about with regard to the weight. Was there more weight given to this or more weight given to that? I don't know. You know, I was there. I had the difficult job of cross-examining a circuit court judge, which isn't something you want to always do, but I did cross-examine her. I felt that the board, just like a sitting as a circuit court judge, has the opportunity to observe and make somewhat subjective decisions from time to time. And apparently after reading the transcript and listening to everything that was testified to, felt that Mr. Hopewell was maybe close to being outside the bounds, but still remain inside the bounds with regard to his representation of Don Natchez. I'm gonna conclude. I think Mr. Hopewell needs the 10 minutes remaining to speak for himself and to answer your questions.
One question.
But if you have no questions of me, yes, Justice.
I do. Do you feel from what you've observed and the fact that Mr. Hopewell has not had an active practice over the last 5 years or so, that he could, you know, make the transition to handle an active practice without some supervision?
I believe that he could, Justice Sabers, based on my involvement with him for about the last 3 or 4 years. We have discussed many litigated cases. He has, for the record, he has sent some cases my way. He has not done them, but he's referred some cases to me. I visited with him about those cases, obviously, and I feel he has a good understanding and a good grasp of the law. It's the current state of the law, and I believe that he would be an asset. I believe the type of people that he represents, how he involves himself in the system, I believe he not only wouldn't be a detriment, I believe he would be an asset. I think if you fully reinstate him, there will be people who will thank you for doing that. And I don't think you're going to have problems with Mr. Hopewell.
Are you suggesting then that he would fill a niche in the legal profession that needs filling in this state?
To a certain degree, Chief Justice, I think that's very, very well put.
One more question.
Yeah.
And it may be none of my business, but you've had him added to your malpractice insurance policy. Mm-hmm. Is that a gift thing, or you know, what I'm really getting at is, does he have the financial wherewithal from a practice that supports him covering an emergency or pay his own insurance and this type of thing and to handle a crisis if it appears, and they always appear, you know?
I believe that he does, and he can address that from his financial situation. Mr. Hopewell is covered on my insurance until January 31st of 2007, and I told him that, you know, he's depending on what this court does, you know, I would want him to make arrangements to get his own coverage. Up to this point, my insurance company allows him to be on my policy of counsel at no charge. It's So it hasn't been costing me anything.
Of counsel?
Of counsel. He's referred to as of counsel. He doesn't act, he does, under my policy, he's not entitled to, obviously he wouldn't be because you've said he can't. He can't go into court or do anything of that nature or plead any cases or anything of that nature.
But he has gone into court under Natchez.
Right, under the supervision of Mr. Johnson, right.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Volosky.
Thank you very much. Okay. Appreciate that.
Mr. Hopewell, the court will entertain any comments you have to address to us.
Please the court, it's my privilege and honor to be here before this august body, to be fully reinstated to the practice of law that I otherwise revere as my profession. And I would, in answer to your concern about my off-counsel status on the insurance policy, if I otherwise practice less than 20 hours a week, it's something that otherwise accommodates to Mr. Volesky's policy by the Anderson Agency or Dennis Disbro in Aberdeen or Zurich, where in my practice is certainly, I don't do more than 15 or never would exceed 20 hours in the course of the week for what I do. I am now currently colleaguing with Mr. Volesky on some rather complex federal litigation regarding a job discrimination case by a Native American. And I do know my procedure. If you review the record, the Natchez proceeding is that I think my objections were meritorious as far as what I stated to be objections to, on evidence in that particular case. And I have, in the course of a career, made probably as many as 20 appearances before this court, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, and the United States Supreme Court. I am thoroughly competent to otherwise be able to read the rules and know what I have to put into briefs and otherwise acquit myself as a competent practitioner of law. I do represent any number of Native Americans as in a pro bono status. In any case, it's been my privilege by virtue of the fact I have made some fairly wise real estate investments in the course of my life where I'm not totally dependent on legal fees to otherwise pay my bills and otherwise proceed with the practice of law. I probably have a net worth of close to $1 million. I could be a self-insurer. I'm not at risk of, it's never been my practice. I've never had a client grievance. I've never had a Rule 11 sanction. And I play according to the rules of the game. And I've taken very seriously this court's orders in the past, and I think have faithfully complied with the order of 1999, January 3, relative to the matter of my having filed, at this point, 31 quarterly reports, have had, since 2003, been into more than 15 hours a year CLE attendance of seminars, and I believe I've always been respectful of the courts, and I do revere this profession, and I am your supplicant, and by your grace you might allow me to just kind of go back to practice and where I'm not otherwise a burden on Richard Johnson, and I certainly believe that I will live up to the standards of the bar.
What are you going to do for insurance in January?
Well, yeah, if the case I'm involved right now, complex litigation, I'm colleaguing with Ron Volesky on that.
Well, one of the conditions was that you get insurance, which you've done to this point.
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
But it sounds like you're going to have to do something in January.
Well, I would hope, you know, at that point we'll cross that bridge and maybe where I would continue with my status. I don't have any intention of practicing law for more than 20 hours in any given week. I might add
Can you get insurance?
I have made numerous applications to insurance companies for malpractice insurance. And on strength of the fact that I've been under suspension as of 1993, I can't get the insurance. That ends up being a rule of the insurance company.
If the suspension is lifted, can you get insurance?
Yes, it has had dramatic impact on my ability to get liability insurance. I made application to two insurance companies down in Omaha that otherwise one of them was his agent was something Deers, D-I-E-R-S. The other is another company down there that Zurich has said no to me, independent of my off-consul status with Ron Valesky. I made a best of faith effort to get that insurance, Judge. But the insurance companies have, I guess, their standard. Once I'm otherwise even, notwithstanding the fact I've never been guilty of any malpractice, but the fact is I can't get the insurance on my own hook. And, I mean, I regret that. But thank goodness I've got this opportunity to continue to practice some law.
What along that line, what do you intend? What kind of practice are you intending? I mean, are you looking at a lot of trial work or more office work or whatever?
It would be some trial work, Your Honor.
And that's what you're mainly interested in, doing trial work?
Personal injury cases as well as civil rights cases if they come along, although civil rights is pretty difficult to otherwise get to a jury anymore. But I'm a trial and appellate lawyer. I'd welcome any opportunities to write briefs to this court.
I know it's a matter, I know it's a matter of pride, but with your practice, principally pro bono work, civil rights work, and maybe personal injuries, wouldn't you yourself feel better, in view of the fact that you've had a limited practice for several years now, wouldn't you actually feel better if you had someone helping you supervise your work, or someone, two heads are better than one? Wouldn't you actually feel better about taking on a practice in the future that way?
Your Honor, I've always appreciated the opportunities to practice in collaboration. But at the same time, I really possess the experience and the skills to otherwise be practicing in draft pleadings independent of another lawyer's approval. I can make a case before a court and a jury relative to what's necessary to establish medical evidence in terms of, I know what it takes to, get medical testimony and deposition. It's like riding a bicycle. Those things don't leave you. And where granted, there's been a protracted period of time that I've not been active in the trial practice, it is things that I have, I've kept current through CLE. And it goes beyond just pride. I mean, the fact is, I'm competent.
Do you think any lawyer should be permitted to practice without some kind of malpractice protection?
Well, Your Honor, I haven't been.
Recognizing that you've never been sued for malpractice and a complaint hasn't been filed, but recognizing the court's responsibility to the public of South Dakota, should this court require everyone, not just Richard Hopewell, but Mr. Valesky or anybody practicing law, saying, in effect, making it mandatory?
I think as a general principle, you're correct, Justice Miller. I really believe that. I mean, it was within 30 days after you came down with your January 3, 1999 order of conditional practice, I was in there trying to get insurance. And again, just by virtue of the suspension in of itself, they will not give me the insurance. It's not fair, but that's the case. I mean, actuarially, I'd be a good risk for them. I mean, based on the fact I've never had a malpractice claim, And based on the fact I am competent, and I mean I don't present any unusual risk to an insurance company. I can understand the general principle of where lawyers should have malpractice insurance, but in my case also, I do have substantial net worth. I can be a self-insurer in that improbable event I'd ever be found liable on a malpractice case. But in answer to your question, yes, I agree with the general principle. Doggone it, I've done on at least three different occasions with separate insurance companies you know, implored their coverage, and I get a letter saying no. I'm rejected by virtue of the very fact that I've been suspended since 1993. That's my sad dilemma.
Mr. Hopewell, your time has expired. Yes, sir. I'll grant you one more minute to just kind of sum up what thoughts you want to close with.
Well, I was admitted to practice in 1962. I really have been you know, I mean, again, I believe that I've conducted myself as a worthy lawyer, that I'm to be trusted certainly to be able to go into court without supervision. And I'll grant you this, that I made an egregious error back in 1990 as I otherwise challenged Judge Keene. I've sensed the apologies have been there. I believe that Keene has personally forgiven me for my transgression. In any case, I'm just honored by the privilege to even make this request. And with that, I rest my case.
Thank you, Mr. Hopewell.
Seek your future collegium. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hopewell.
Thank you.
Mr. Freeberg, do you wish to rebuttal or speak or what?
No, I just have a concern, Chief Justice, in response to your question about the insurance, Justice Center. Unfortunately, the transcript I have does not have the exhibits, but there is an exhibit, I think it's two in there, and my recollection is that exhibit said or established that if reinstated, Richard could get insurance. But I don't have that here. I looked at it yesterday when I looked at the court's file, and that's just my recollection, but you may want to look at that to see whether that resolves your question. Other than that, I have nothing to add.
Thank you, Mr. Freeberg. The court will be in recess.